Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and we're here together every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Each week on Connect the Dots, we connect the dots between you, your personal well-being, your community, your neighborhood, your region, and what's going on in our society and on planet Earth. What's going on with our water, air, and earth? What's going on with our food? What's going on with our social policies? And what's going on with our democracy? All of this interact to affect our well-being and vibrancy in life and that of future generations, and that's what we talk about each week on Connect the Dots. I'm a longstanding journalist at the intersection of environment, food, and health, and today's guest, I'm really excited to say, is somebody who's also venturing into this terrain with a terrific recent book, as well as longstanding work, connecting the dots for women and, you know, people who want to beautify of all genders, I'll add that, and, you know, what our search for beauty can lead us to when we really look at what the ingredients in hair and beauty products you know, contain and their impact on our health and also on our environment. And so we'll be talking today with Ronnie Citron Fink, who is the author of a new book, True Roots, What Quitting Hair Dye Taught Me About Health and Beauty. And, you know, this is, I'm really happy to be having this discussion, and this is a really cool book. And also, Ronnie is no come lately to the whole question of environments and toxicity and policy, because she's the editorial director for the Environmental Defense Fund's Moms Clean Air Force, a national organization of over 1 million people uniting to protect children's health by combating the urgent crisis of climate change. So, you know, this is the same territory we cover week after week on Connect the Dots. Ronnie Citron Fink is firmly grounded in that, and today we get to connect it to beauty. Welcome to the show, Ronnie Citron Fink. So happy to have you here.
Well, thank you for having me, Allison. I'm excited.
So, you know, your book is a really, I love the title, True Roots. Your book is a terrific journey. About, you know, the choices we make. It's about your own personal pathway through consumer choices, about, you know, what we'll use, what products we'll use, you know, how safe they are. And for you, that's, and this, and for this book, and in this book, True Roots, that really centers on hair dyes, and what you learned when, you know, when you kind of woke up to what was, you know, what were some of the risks and some of the problems to this routine act of, you know, kind of beautification that people of all ages, and even men do it, and people of all ages do it, which is coloring the hair with hair dyes that contain toxic ingredients. And, you know, could you describe for our listeners a little bit about, you know, how you were kind of going along with that, kind of never really questioning it, and then kind of woke up and began looking at it and considering a transition and ultimately making one. Like, how did that all come about?
Well, True Roots is my story, and it examines the beauty aspects of going gray, because I needed to do that in order to get to going gray, of course. And it goes beyond that, the cultural moment. We seem to be having a cultural moment now where lots of women are waking up to this for various reasons. I had three reasons. I had the upkeep, the cost, and the chemicals. And the chemicals was a big issue for me. I had dyed my long hair that was like dark, dark brown, really dark brown for more than 20 years. And I started coloring in my early 30s. I was in my mid-50s when I just had this wake-up call. And like you mentioned, I work in the environmental field, and I was working deeply in environmental health. And I was I'm very aware of the chemicals that are in our products and that come from industrial sources, certainly pollution and body pollution in this case, or body burden, as they call it in the environmental health world. And my tipping point came as an editor, and I was sitting in at the Environmental Defense Fund in Washington, D.C. in a health meeting from the health team about the buildup of chemicals in our bodies. And a scientist started rattling off a list of ingredients in our personal care products. And I kept thinking to myself, I know this. I know there's lead in lead in lipstick. And I know, you know, we're finding asbestos in kids' makeup. And, you know, I've known this. But I watched all my colleagues as we're talking, and you know, they're wiping off their lipstick and they're peeling their nail polish, and I could almost feel my scalp tingling. You know, I knew that makeup and hair dye were not regulated and not tested. So I asked the scientist, the environmental scientist, whether it was toxic, and her answer kind of led me to investigate the book, which was, she said to me, the economic success of hair dye collides so powerfully with popular demand that the task of understanding the landscape goes beyond science and law. So it's kind of like out of our conference room and beyond, out into the world. And of course, the first thing I thought about was, how am I going to do this? Like, how to do it? So it wasn't just about, okay, I can do the research, but as I'm doing the research, how am I going to actually do this? How am I going to live with two-tone hair? I was covering, you know, gray hair. And that's kind of how it started. That's how it all started for me. And I ran out of that meeting, called my hairdresser, my hair colorist, and I said, cancel my appointment. And they were like, what? You know, you have an appointment. I think I was coloring at that point and now, you know, because I had to, I would walk out of the salon and I would look in the mirror a few days later and my hair would, I would already see my roots. So I was coloring almost every 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, which is a lot. It was a lot, and it was expensive, and I knew that it went against everything I worked for as an environmental health, you know, understanding like this whole concept of that. So, I also knew that that we've known about this for a really long time, that this is not something new, that we know that we have these chemicals in our environment. And I also know that we dump these chemicals down the drain. So I knew that that would have to be part of my investigation, which it was. And I knew also that people would be asking me as I was, whether or not there were safer ways to color their hair. Are there safer ways? You know, people were asking me about pregnancy, and I started coloring my hair. I had a child that was about 29 years old, and between, my kids are 4 years apart, and in between, I started coloring my hair. So by my second child, my son, I was dying while I was pregnant and dying while I was dying. Coloring, I wasn't dying, and coloring while I was breastfeeding. So, and I hadn't really thought about it. And this is someone, and I was someone who, like, I used cloth diapers. This was, you know, quite a while ago, but the reports were coming out about the chemicals in baby applesauce, which was one of the first environmental, like, I think it was 60 Minutes that did a big report called A is for Applesauce. And it was Alar, the chemical, yes, was being sprayed on. And I threw out anything, all the apples, only bought organic. I still only buy organic. But yet I was coloring my hair and not thinking twice about it. And I would scratch my head after I'd have my hair dyed, and other women can relate to this. I'd have, especially with dark hair dye, I'd have, like, you know, deposits under my fingernails for days, which means my body, my blood, you know, my my scalp, a very rich blood supply, was absorbing the chemicals from hair dye for days and days and days into my body. And I just had this wake up call. I was just sitting there going, wow, it's not just the hair dye. It's also all these other products, even though I was able to clean up some of my other products. Like, you can find, you know, cleaner moisturizers, and you can find even cleaner lipsticks. I just bought something at a craft fair that had 3 ingredients in it. I was like, well, this is great. Even some sunscreens are getting, they're cleaning up. But I had no, I haven't heard of anything happening to hair dye. I knew that some hair dye was eliminating ammonia out of it, and I had to figure out, I had to figure out what ammonia was doing in hair dye in the first place, like what it did to, you know, how it works. What does it do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, ammonia is one of the chemicals of concern in hair dye. And it's a potential endocrine disruptor, and it opens up the hair cuticle to allow the dye to be, like, absorbed and to change the color of the hair. It's not easy to get substitutes, and they found some substitutes. And some hair dye, and you have to look hard for it, you can find ammonia-free. But that's not necessarily means that it's clean, because there's still other chemicals in it. So, and what's really, what I found really interesting was that, before we get to talk about the regulations, which was really a big part of it, it was really about what I was finding out about hairdressers' health, because there haven't been studies on individual women, but there have been studies on hairdressers' health, and we know that there's a toxic brew of chemicals found in the air of hair salons, and the International Agency for Research on Cancer has found that occupational exposures as a hairdresser or a barber are probably carcinogenic to humans. Other studies have found that hairdressers were 3 times more likely to get breast cancer than women in other occupations, and 5 times more likely to get bladder cancer. That was something really kind of, those were the studies that I could find. There have not been studies done on individual women and their health and how hair dye affects their health. But we know that in the salons, you know, hairdressers are exposed to toxic chemicals by inhaling them, absorbing them through their skin. I read a story in the book about my hair colorist who had, you know, the chronic dermatitis on her hands. They were bright red and raw, and that's not unlikely. It's not unheard of. I've had people contact me since I wrote the book saying, "Hey, that happens to me." Anyway, so we know that these happen. There's everything from the ammonia to formaldehyde, and we know that formaldehyde gets released during hair straightening. It gets worse when it's heated up with the chemicals, and it's a known carcinogen. And the Center for Disease Control says that working with formaldehyde could increase your chances of having fertility problems and miscarriage. But yet dozens of hair straightening brands, have been banned in Europe and Canada and Australia for using excess levels of formaldehyde. We can't seem to get these things regulated. And that's something I know you talk about a lot. And that's something that I knew a little about, but I learned a lot more.
Yeah, what's your perspective on what's going on with the regulations, for listeners who, for whom this may be a new topic? I mean, what is happening there? Because there is this assumption that if it's on the shelf, they won't actually go as far as to say it's safe, because I think people have, have kind of, the message is filtering through. But, but the idea that it couldn't be that bad or a little bit, won't hurt you, and all of that is what people think. I mean, what is the situation actually?
I hear this all the time. We hear this all the time in the work that I do. It's, you know, we think it's on the shelf. This is America. It must be safe, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yet, you know, groups like the Environmental Working Group reported that a third of hair products marketed to African American women are in the safe range for low toxicity, unsafe range for low toxicity.
Oh, my goodness.
With dyes and relaxers. It's just, it goes on and on. But the it's the FDA, so it's the Food and Drug Administration that regulates hair dye and many other cosmetics. And they cross over with some EPA, formaldehyde for one, this is, you know, it's EPA. And while the FDA can regulate cosmetics, it does not pre-approve hair dye before they land on the shelf. So product manufacturers get to decide whether or not the ingredients in their products are safe according to the FDA rules, and then they act accordingly. So the manufacturers will continue to market products as long as they're not restricted or banned and as long as they sell. And that's just, you know, that's just the way it is. And like I said, this is nothing new. We I have to find something because it was really interesting. There was this article in Ms. Magazine for a long time ago. So, and she actually wrote the article in 1990, but Gloria Steinem says that let's see if I find it. I'm sorry. Oh, that in 1990, she writes this article called Sex, Lies, and Advertising, and she recounts Clairol was one of their biggest advertisers, outrage, because without warning, magazine published an article that was, they say, called pro-gray hair, citing the potential carcinogens in hair dye as a reason to stop coloring. And this caused Clairol's ad agency to pull its advertising altogether for 6 months. And even after that, Ms. Magazine got almost none of the ads from Clairol. And she writes, in the Ms. Gazette, they do a brief report on a congressional hearing with the FDA into chemicals used in hair dyes that are absorbed through the skin and may be carcinogenic. Newspapers report on it too, but Clairol, a Bristol-Myers subsidiary that makes dozens of products, a few of which have just had been advertising in Ms., is outraged. And so not all the magazines, the news magazines, just Ms., they go after Ms., and they change their hair color formula in response to the hearings, but they still have the chemicals of concern in them. And so anyway, she ascertains that women's products, like women's magazines, have really never been the subject of much serious reporting, and that though these chemical additives and pesticides and animal fats are major risks in the U.S. and clothes, and the way we make clothes, but yet we can't seem to get these, you know, get it by, we're still ignoring the contents of these beauty products that are absorbed into our bodies through our skins day after day after day. So anyway, it was kind of shocking to me. I had a lot of revelations as I was writing that, you know, I learned that 40 other countries have restricted or banned more than 1,400 chemicals as I was writing. This has changed. I think it's higher since then, from the cosmetics, including hair dyes. By the comparison, you know, the U.S. has only, what's the other half of this? The U.S. has only banned 13.
So that's an amazing number. I mean, there are other categories of things that people have fought for that are omitted from things. I mean, admittedly, we've talked about on this show a lot, but, you know, but not recently, really. There being 84,000 chemicals that have been grandfathered, you know, that are used in anything from the coating on, you know, the sheets and pajamas and sofas, you know, waterproofing, and, you know, and certainly, you know, makeup is another category. But, you know, why is it that some categories are better studied, or is it a kind of a near universal phenomenon that the industry, is trusted or allowed to, you know, kind of make the decision about this?
I think it's just it's the way our regulations are in this country. The EPA has a different is a totally different governing agency than the FDA, and the FDA is what you know, some of the things that you just mentioned are EPA regulated, and and we've seen them in the news. We see with the FDA they are so underfunded that they can hardly keep up. They're underfunded and understaffed, which is really it's frightening that we have to we're guinea pigs. I had when I was trying to figure out where all this hair dye goes when it goes down the drain, where does it go? And I could not. It was, you know how you can sometimes do this cradle to cradle and follow the, follow the stream and see where it goes. I had a very hard time finding where it all goes. And I work in collaborate with other organizations. And one of the organizations I collaborated with that we work with, we partner with, is Made Safe. Made Safe certifies certain products as healthy, just like EWG, Environmental Working Group, does in a very similar way. And she introduced me to Paul Hawken, who wrote Drawdown. He was actually, as I was doing this, as Paul was writing Drawdown, I was talking to him on the phone, and he's, you know, a legend in the environmental world, and, you know, best-selling author and activist. And I had actually heard him give a talk at Omega Center for Sustainable Living. I live in the Hudson Valley. So I had a phone call with him, and the first things I learned was from him was that over 95% of hair dyes end up in the aquatic environment, causing damage to marine life and polluting our rivers, bays, and oceans. And he says that he says that 3 billion pounds of hair dyes goes into our ocean. This, as he was doing his research for Drawdown, he was working on this. And he says the byproducts of salons, chemicals, bleach, perm solutions, color formulations, and ammonia get rinsed down the drain and absorbed into our water and into our groundwater. And as we follow this life cycle, we know that they persist in the environment. They bioaccumulate in the water and soil and in the tissues of whatever is living, which is generally fish in those waterways. So, you know, and also as climate change, you know, kind of provokes more and more of these extreme weather events, these groundwaters get mixed up with floodwaters, just like we saw it happen after Hurricane Katrina. And the floodwaters carry all these chemicals and pollutants and spread the chemicals and, you know, create these serious long-term health effects that are very hard to pinpoint. And we understand some of these effects, but we really don't know all of them. Anyway, Paul tells me that he likens women to crash test dummies for the beauty industry, and he believes it's time for the industry to clean up its act, because behind all the glitzy ads and the long-legged models, the glamour and the glitz, it's a witch's brew of compounds that should not be placed on the hair, scalp, skin, or lips.
Of women, God, this is just so incredibly frightening. In the course of your work, did you find anything about, you know, what any guess or any study that would begin, you know, to tell us what a lifetime cumulative exposure might wind up being?
Well, the problem with some of these chemicals in these products, particularly in hair dye, is that you could have an effect after years and years of using it, or it could happen the first time you use it. It's very hard to know how it gets mixed up in this body burden that we have, and in our particular individual makeup, and you know, and doctors really don't understand it. You know, we're wrecking this havoc inside of our bodies by mixing up these chemicals. We don't know, you know, we don't know how they interact with each other. So it's really hard to answer that, and it's really hard to study that. I mean, that's you know, that is a limitation to be able to isolate. You know, you can't say it's the PPD in hair dye or the there's lead acetate. Lead in hair dye, which it's mostly in men's hair dye. So, you know, that's some of the limitations. So, you know, other than this overall hairdresser health and another organization that really does really good work on this, and I used a lot of their was able to use a lot of their studies, was the Women's Voices for the Earth. And they put out a big report, and they have a small fact sheet, which kind of brings it down to bite-sized pieces, unmasking the impacts of toxic chemicals on salon workers. And they really looked closely about, and they found that, you know, 60% of salon workers suffer from these skin problems. They have decreased lung function. I write about my own hairdresser. I have two that I write about in the book. The book is really, you know, at first they started, just to backtrack a little bit, at first they started writing it as a memoir because I really, in order for me to get over the beauty angst of going gray and, you know, looking at myself in the mirror and dealing with, just a total different look for me and feeling like I might be older, look my age. Did I not? There were so many things that went through my mind. But as I was doing this, I was writing it as a memoir. And when I sold the book to Island Press, they said, well, this is an issues book with a personal narrative. So, and that's what it really became. And that really helped guide me into all these different, like, nooks and crannies of chemicals and regulations and products and all these, you know, the studies. And so I have all these stories that go through the book and stories about my hairdressers and how I find them. And that's kind of the fun part. That was fun.
I mean, it's really amazing that this is a, you know, taken together, these are health burdens on women. You know, I mean, they're women have, and also it's not just hair dye. Yeah, your book focuses on hair dye, but of course we know that, you know, there's other kinds of makeup, all kinds of things that people are using, even perfumes, you know, with
fragrance.
The fragrance, which is so, you know, it's a chemical. And so every time, I mean, I personally, you know, it's like people are raving about some, you know, perfume that's made like with all the synthetic chemicals and unnamed fragrances, which are very sensitizing and, you know, with an increase in allergies in the population. The more you think about these things and what we're doing, you know, and yet this is, I mean, I guess it's the armor that, you know, that women put between themselves and going out into the world, you know, because it's not that we're worrying that we have lipstick on or that our hair is dyed when we're sort of making breakfast in the morning, maybe, you know, like very few people would be that concerned. This is all about how one is seen in the world, you know.
I write a lot about that.
Yeah, what's your view of that?
Well, obviously, you know, we've been kind of sold this anti-aging. I think that, you know, when it comes to hair dye in particular, you know, teenagers and kids and this new kind of trend of this milky white dyed hair, you know, this has always happened. So it's not, and this, it's, you know, it's not, this isn't, it's not as concerning, because I think that is a phase of this beauty adornment. It's covering gray tends to be what the market is, that you know, this is where we're being marketed. And in hair dye, and covering gray is the big, it's not haircuts or blowouts or styling that drives the salon business. It's professional hair coloring. It's that's the vital anchor service. And, you know, InStyle magazine found that of a survey of almost 1,500 women, hair color services were up, and only 7% of the respondents of these 1,500 women were hair color were dye free. So, and they say that the reason for this upswing is because baby boomers like myself are in need of covering gray. And, you know, I found that it was like hair dye was like beauty pablum. You know, it really was. It was like, for me, it was like when I had it done, it was the day that I felt I was, you know, I looked my best. And and I could feel like, you know, everything was put together. I didn't have these slovenly roots that would show up after a few weeks. And I got a lot of compliments. People always told me I looked so much younger than I was. And I think that's part of it. It's that we have been kind of fed this anti-aging that we really need. Meanwhile, who would ever be anti-aging? I mean, we're aging all the time. Why would we want to be against that? I kept thinking to myself as it was, you know, we don't always write the words down, but as a writer, I'm writing it down and going, anti-aging, that doesn't even make sense to me. But, you know, this just goes on through, you know, this is part of our media. And you know, I think Allure magazine had announced that they actually retired the term anti-aging, and which is pretty good, because we spend like $350 billion on anti-aging products. Spend. I know. And of course, the largest buyers of anti-aging are, you know, older women. And anyway, their magazine had decided that they wanted to celebrate, you know, growing into your own skin, wrinkles and all. And we are youth obsessed. We really are. We're a youth obsessed society, and we don't have that many models for women with gray hair. I mean, we have Jamie Lee Curtis, you know, and I think we look to celebrities for these beautiful women who kind of paved the way for us. And, you know, certainly I didn't get it from my mother. My mother dyed her hair until I started writing the book, and she was 88 years old. So, and then she stopped dyeing it.
Oh my goodness.
And both my mother and my daughter I have a daughter in her early 30s, and she's of course getting gray, and they're both having these kind of pangs, like, oh, you're writing that book, and we want to, you know. My mother finally, after I kept reading her pages and pages, I would read to her over the phone, and she would just say to me, oh, I have to stop. I'm just going to stop. And she just stopped. And so she must have been dyeing her hair. I mean, I had never seen her. She's been dyeing her hair since the 60s. So,
oh my.
And she stopped. Yeah. Yeah. My daughter is having, I write about her in the book, and how she's kind of having these, this quandary about whether or not to cover her grays or not. And, but we are starting to see, I think, you know, it's gray hair is still, even though we're having this moment, we are starting to see more women with gray. It's still equated with aging, and I certainly was concerned that I would look older. I work in the environmental world. It's young and fun and interesting, and but you know, as I started seeing more and more women transitioning and into this cultural thing. But the $70 billion hair and beauty business continues to perpetuate the myth that gray hair will make you look older, and that if you don't care about your beauty, you know, that you'll be invisible. I write about this in the book too, which is kind of, you know, that's something my hairdresser said to me. You know, she tried to get me to put I have two hairdressers in the book, the before and after. But the first one, who was my hair colorist, you know, she every time I said to her for years up until this point where I just said no more color, she kept telling me, oh no, the back of your hair is still really dark. And I kept thinking, I don't think so, but how would I know the back of my hair? And, you know, she would tell me that I needed to blend in color, or balayage, which is what they paint on a color to kind of hide the gray. And I once I learned all about the hair dye, I couldn't even go to the salon anymore. And I write about this in the book, and I find this hairdresser who is, he's just amazing. And he makes house calls. So during my transition, I had someone who came to my house. I didn't have to have it very often. He just cut off the dyed ends, which was fun. But we all get these messages, you know, overt and subliminal from the media to cover up if we care about our beauty. And, you know, we have to remember that there's like a distinct double standard between men and women. You know, men with gray hair are embraced, you know, positively as silver foxes and distinguished gentlemen. And I just think ageism and sexism intersects powerfully when it comes to these ingrained types of beauty ideals. And and that was also enlightening. It was so fascinating to me. It was all really enlightening. And as I was going through this, I also had to deal with how to do it. And, you know, I was how to deal with other parts that were happening, like how would it affect my skin tone, how would it affect my clothing. You know, I found that some things I just didn't look as good in. I couldn't wear tans anymore. It was just my particular coloring I had gone. And I have that kind of silvery gray hair. It's not that white. It's white, but it's silvery. It has much more gray in it. So, you know, and I was warned that my hair, you know, that I would wash out my complexion, it would dry out my hair. That really wasn't true. I didn't have any problems with, you know, I have very long, thick, straight hair, and it was longer than my headshot in the book. That was the day I had cut off the last of my, we took those pictures, but I found that it didn't do that at all. What happens is that some of the shampoos that are recommended for women with gray hair definitely dry your hair out. My hair particularly seems more porous, so that's where gray hair is different. It's not, doesn't have the color on it, so that, you know, it's porous as chlorine and pollution and smoke. Certain shampoos, like I can't use shampoo with any color in it. Use a clear shampoo mostly. I was using it had a yellow tinge to it, and my hair looked a little yellowy. You know, certain hair products heat, you know, flat irons and those kind of things can yellow your hair. And then there's like the mother of all gray hair enemies, which is what I have in my house, which is hard water. Hard water just has so much minerals that it can affect your hair. But, you know, in regards to how I feel now, I feel empowered. I feel people stop me on the street all the time and say, is that your real color? And I'm like, oh yeah. Anyway, but you know,
that's nice.
And people ask me, you know, if I feel empowered will they feel empowered to do it? And, you know, I always say, you know, you only feel empowered if you're comfortable in your own skin. And it really was a process that I went through to get to this place. But if letting your hair, you know, go gray, you know, if you feel good about it, the process, you do it. You know, it's not, you know, it won't seem much like a power move if you're self-conscious that you know, you have gray hair.
Well, it's part of the culture. I mean, it's part of, I mean, do you see the culture differently, having undergone, you know, this kind of indoctrination and this, you know, belief that, you know, we have to be other than we are in this kind of way, and then it's actually, you know, physiologically harmful. I mean, how do you look on those, are you more aware of those kinds of things in the culture where, you know, things are telling us that? I mean, or do you, you know, do you still kind of find that you go along with that in some ways or not in others? I mean, what is, you know, what has that process been like?
Well, I think that that's kind of a personal feeling. I personally feel that I don't, that I'm no longer covering up. So because of that, I feel somewhat ageless, as opposed to where, you know, you look at someone and you think, oh, she's still got that long, dark, silky hair, and, you know, she looks so young. I don't feel like that anymore, but I don't also ascribe, and I write about this in the book, in the beginning of the book, because my mother says to me, you know, and she's still coloring her hair, of course, at this point, you know, she's saying, like, old gray hair is not necessarily good hair. And you know, she said, you have good hair, why would you do that kind of thing? And I don't feel that way. I feel like there, I know that I, you know, there's all these magazine articles and online going gray groups,
Really?
And that's really, that, oh, there's tons of them. There's like these private Facebook groups with tens of thousands of women in them from around the world. And they all have like a different journey. They really all have a different journey, but they seem to be like all challenging each other and supporting each other. That's empowering. It's empowering to see that, you know, that for all those reasons, and they're all the same three reasons, very few by chemicals, which is really interesting. When I like dip into these Facebook groups, or if I share my book or an article, I had an article written in Style magazine about it, where there was no mention, all the mentions of chemicals were taken out. It was kind of a funny, it's a funny article, because they had, the editor came to me and asked me, she gave me the title, and the title was, I embraced my gray, but nobody else did, which is, you know, clickbait, but fun. It was really fun to write, because I had a lot of fun comments and a lot of interesting comments. You know, people say, oh, you could do it, but I couldn't do it. You know, I can't do it. My hair is it's like someone, one woman said to me, hair dye gives my, you know, hair color gives my hair life. It's like, you know, and I kept thinking, for me, I felt like it was like a death sentence while I was doing it. I was like, oh, my God. You know, I just had this totally, you know, I never felt like that before, but it was really changing. So that was a fun thing. But there are these support groups for women who do it. And I know that there are hairdressers now, certainly, who are supportive. And I found one after a fashion. Which was fun.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, kind of realizing, you know, it gives you life is the myth, and the reality is that, you know, you're being dosed with chemicals. What are which could actually impact your health quite negatively. What are some of the worst chemicals in hair dye?
Well, one is PPD, and I'm not going to, I won't read you the whole, I can't pronounce the whole chemical name, but it's PPD, and it's listed as PPD, and it is in 3/4 of all hair dye, and it's one of the, it's a coal tar hair dye, which is derived, it's now derived from a petroleum. And, you know, coal tar dyes have been associated with a number of health effects, like mostly allergic reaction, and some have been linked to cancer. And what's really interesting that I found when I was going through it, when I was really digging into what the FDA, you know, can and cannot regulate, or does and does not regulate, really, mostly doesn't. But the PPD is the most common component of hair dyes. So, and when what happened was the FDA actually had a hair dye, instead of restricting PPD, because for all coal tar hair dyes, just think about it, what that means, environmentally as long, and as well as what we're putting into our body, they have a like this like nifty coal tar hair dye safety checklist. Now, I dyed my hair 25 years, and coal tar was the main ingredient in, or PPD was the main ingredient in my, it was even in my all so-called natural hair dye. And, you know, they have this checklist that says follow all directions, you know, do a patch test. I never did a patch test. Keep hair dyes away from your eyes, you know, wear gloves when applying hair dye. Do not leave the product on any longer. You know, rinse your scalp well. I mean, on and keep out of the rich. And, you know, I mean, first of all, who knows that there's such a thing as a coal tar hair dye safety checklist. I certainly hadn't seen it. And I could wager to guess that my hairdressers hadn't in my two decades of coloring. And, like, it was like racing through my thoughts that hair dye was, you know, it dripped into my eyes often and caused stinging. I had no idea how long the dye needed to be stay on my hair. My colorist said that my gray was getting resistant and that the dye needed to be left on longer. And for days after coloring, when I scratched my head, like I mentioned, I'd get it under my fingernails, but that wasn't the worst of it. I was getting migraines, and they seem to be triggered by hair dyeing sessions. And I'm sure that that has to do with some of the, you know, aromatic chemicals indoor in the salon. And I also was getting, I got rashes on my face. I started to get rashes. I went to the doctor. They told me, you know, I asked the doctor whether or not it could be my hair dye. This was probably at least 10 years before I stopped dyeing. He said, it's not your hair dye. People dye their hair all the time, which is really, you know, that seems to be the answer, is that everybody does it. So why not, you know? But of course, we're getting all these issues. I finally went to a doctor, an internal medicine doctor, who was also a classical homeopath, because I could not get rid of this rashes by my eye. And he told me to stay away from PPD and to stay away from sodium lauryl sulfate, which is in most shampoos. It's, anyway, that's the PPD story. but this toluene, which is a neurotoxin, lead acetate, which I've mentioned, it's in men's progressive hair dyes. It's actually, they've been working on this. In fact, EDF has been working on this, and some of the other environmental groups have been. Lead acetate has been banned for almost a decade in Canada and the EU.
And we still have it in what we're doing. Yeah, we haven't been able to get rid of it. But let me ask you a question. You say that you were dyeing your hair. We did. Oh, good.
Well, we're working on it. It's working on it. But, of course, we were talking about under the, you know, this particular administration, nothing's getting enforced. But
right.
Continue.
let me just add, we're coming near the end of the show, so I just wanted to kind of, you know, because this is really a challenge. It's not well regulated. Right now we have an administration that wants to strip down all the regulatory agencies and basically take apart the science, not move forward in any way. And before they came on the scenes, it was already a problem for not just one or another administrations, but across the board in all administrations for going on for like 40 years. Now, you were saying that, you know, you had been dyeing your hair for 25 years during the, you know, before you basically withdrew, you know, like from this addiction or behavior or whatever, like we all have to kind of look at our behavior and maybe reconsider some things. But, you know, how long had you been looking at environmental health connections and toxins before, you know, the kind of message really got through to you? Like how long before, when you began looking into and reporting on? You know, what kind of time span was that?
I was probably buying my makeup, let's say, in the health food store, Whole Foods, for at least 10 or 15 years, but I could not give up the hair dye. It was like, it was my last vestige. It was something I just did not want to do because it really was so tied into other issues. But now I understand that we have this kind of chemical hair print, you know, that goes along with, you know, that can have this effect on our overall health. And, I hope that just writing the book and getting it out there makes other women just think about the possibility of beauty after hair coloring, because I certainly found it to be really, really empowering. And I feel really happy to know that I'm not dousing myself anymore with hair dye.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah, that's great. But it's really interesting because it's like we make these bargains with ourselves, you know, even when you're highly knowledgeable. And then there are a lot of people who are back at the point of, if it's on the shelf, it must be okay. But even for those of us who kind of know something is not okay, and this, of course, has greater reference to, what we need to have happen to improve the situation for the environment, if that's even feasible by the time we get through all of this. There are things that we know, and then there is, and that's what's so interesting about, you know, your book. And then there is the, you know, which is True Roots, and we've been talking today with Ronnie Citron Fink, What Quitting Hair Dye Taught Me About Health and Beauty. But, you know, it's kind of like there's a lag between first becoming aware of it, even for someone like you or like me, you know, who's knowledgeable about it. And then a lot of people just are simply have no idea that the perfume they're putting on is allergically sensitizing, that the hair dye, has these toxic ingredients. I mean, actually, if you look at somebody in their 80s who's been dyeing their hair, for many, many, many years, that should give anyone a visual clue that it's, even with the different texture of graying or white hair, that it, you know, it isn't, it's not going so well with your scalp. I mean, that's even visually obvious. But, you know, when it becomes a pattern, it's really, you know, it becomes harder to change. And so to me, this is almost like a perfect metaphor for some of the dilemmas we have in terms of addressing climate change, improving health, making health-centered choices as a society, and the challenges that we face in doing so. So, you know, like what I love about this is that through making that kind of personal choice on your own behalf to stop the hair dyeing, it actually becomes a model for the other kinds of choices that maybe we can make that, you know, have greater impact on some of the large-scale issues that we're facing in this society. So, thank you so much for doing that and for writing about it, because I think this is really an important way for people to begin to ask questions of ourselves and come to terms. There are many things that we can't solve at an individual choice level. But then there are other things that we can make collective choices if we individually participate. And I think it's really, you know, more of us need to be enlisted in doing that. And I think this is a great articulation of that pathway. So thank you, Ronnie. It's great. I mean, how do you connect this with climate in your own mind? Because I know you work on both sides.
I do work on both sides. I think it's really important that we do both, that we do these individual. There are certainly individual things that we can do to keep ourselves healthy, and that's just knowledge, keeping ourselves knowledgeable. We can boycott with our consumer dollars. You know, we see that. We see that in this, and this is happening with talc right now. You know, if we don't use the products, the manufacturers, they clamor to sell these products. They'll clean them up. If they have to, but only if they have to. And, you know, it's really, we also should demand that we have, you know, for transparency. It's really important that we know what's in our product, that the ingredients that are linked to these awful, you know, cancers and hormone disruptors and reproductive
press. Listeners, if you've enjoyed the show, it'll be available in archive, and you can share it with friends through social media. Thank you again, Ronnie, and great luck with all the great work that you're doing. And we'll be back next week on Connect the Dots, Wednesday, 10 a.m. Eastern Time. I'm Allison Rose Levy. Be well.